sign when you have just
yeah.
5 minutes.
Yeah, I have a timer, but no, yeah, but do it.
Okay, we are going for the next talk, or the next two talks are dedicated to, again, a very important field, the Linux audio distribution, and we are very happy that we have those speakers here. First, Frey Ekanayaka will talk about the Agnula project. Thank you very much, Frey.
Thanks. Okay, I'm going to spend some words on the Agnula de Mudi project, which is a Linux distribution, GNU Linux distribution, based on Debian, and it's dedicated to audio and sound application. So here are the contents. I'll start with some background information about how the project born and which are the issues it try to address. Then I'll expose the state of art of the project as far as achievements and results are concerned. Then I'll talk a little bit about the development side. That means how we do develop the distribution and also why we choose Debian for it. And finally, I will just highlight some steps we would like to do in the near future. So about using free software for audio and music. Basically, in the past few years, the situation has changed a lot, and now we have mature tools to use, and we are ready for medium entity production. That means, if you want to produce some relatively small audio project, you can already use the software available for GNU Linux. And the other advantages are that it provides some flexible and interoperational tools. That means that comparing it to proprietary software, you have more communication between the different applications. And the application itself are often really suitable for being adapted. You can bend them to your own needs, especially because you have access to the source code, or anyway, all the infrastructure and the tool chain is accessible from you. So you can modify it in any component, in any piece. Another point is that it's constantly growing. I think I have the perception that the growth is more or less linear. It's not an explosion, but it keeps improving constantly. So from year to year, you can see lots of improvement. And these are not going to disappear quite easily, because they are part of some public domain. And another point is that the Linux audio scene as a really friendly and factual community. That means that if you join main lists or go in IRC channels, or ask support personally via email, you are very likely to get some good feedback, and with a little bit of effort, you can both learn and fix the problems yourself. And also it stimulates experimentation, especially because you have at your disposal all the things you need to modify the programs to meet your own needs. So if you need something really special, you don't have to bother a big software company. You can do it yourself, and in some cases it works. It works. Then there are some issues also, and the applications we are talking about are typically quite unstable in not in the use but in the development. That means that new applications come out very very frequently, or old applications suddenly disappear, or the same application is subject to heavy changes, and sometimes backward compatibility is not guaranteed. So we have something which is really difficult to follow. You need such a big amount of time to stay in sync with all the changes that happen. And this is, from the user point of view, is a little bit demanding. Also, information are not generally systemized. That means you don't have a Linux audio book or an application book which is a reference for that field. Nobody, I think, has put all everything together in a coherent and logical way. Information is typically spread around a number of websites, main list archives, IRC logs, personal web pages, blogs, wikis, and sometimes you just need that information, but you just don't know that it exists and somebody has written it, because there is no easy way to assess it. And a related issue that is documentation, which comes from with the application itself. It's sometimes lacking all the details about how to use the application. So there are many applications without a manual, or the manual has been written by users, and maybe it's lacking parts, or they are only able to part-time follow the development, and it's difficult to keep the documentation in sync with the development, so on and so forth. Also, many times, for example, to tune your system, you have to get information on so many tricks and receipts, how-tos, and it sounds sometimes a little bit magic to people who don't know how to operate properly. So you have to really go into the details of how your hardware works and how the kernel works and everything and stuff like this. It's not really transparent from the user point of view. So the Agnula project was born with the idea to at least partially address these issues related to accessibility and usability. And the focus was both on the tools used and on the creation that you can do with those tools. A little bit of history about it. It started as a European project for fostering the use of free software in the audio domain, and it was founded since April 2002 till April 2004, and now it's currently supported by Media Innovation Unit, which is a research unit in Florence, which formerly was basically a partner of the Agnula Consortium, and some ex-partners, for example, the KTH, IRCAM in Paris, are still supporting the project with some infrastructures as a mirror and a server. So there are two main sub-projects currently in Agnola. One is Libre Music, and that deals with contents and creations. But you will know more about it tomorrow when Andrea Golrioso will present it extensively. And the other sub-project is Agnola De Moody, and it deals, the focus is on the tools, so on the applications. As I said, it's a Linux distribution based on Debian, and it's 100% free software, so you will not find any proprietary component in it, and it's dedicated to professional audio research and work. So, let's go a little bit into the real thing. I'll talk about the installer, which comes in a self-contained CD-ROM. That means you just download one single CD-ROM ISO from the website and you burn it yourself. I think there are some websites, or there were some websites, which provided already burnt images, and they were shipping them to you for a small price, but I don't know the current situation. Anyway, the Agnola project nowadays doesn't provide any commercial version, any box, so you have to download it and burn yourself, basically. And what you get when you boot the CD-ROM, it's a splash like this, which is basically identical to the Debian installer, for the one who knows. And you just press enter, and it starts booting. Now I'm using an emulator called QEMU, and I'm booting from the ISO file. So it takes a little bit to boot because it's emulation, but we can go back later on. Then it asks you about the language and the country. It asks you a few questions and install the first core system. It's comparing it to the Debian installer. This one is slightly simplified because we choose to skip some questions, or we are providing default answers to some questions which we know that in most cases will work, and especially we have mass installation of the packages you need. There is also a prototype live CD version, which is based on some changes that the Ubuntu project made to the Debian installer, but which are not still part of Debian. I'm planning to port them to the main Debian tree. And the good thing about the live CD is that it's a way to have a preview of what you get by installing the actual installable image. And everything is really the same as you would find in a real installation. So you can check also if your hardware gets detected, and which application are in, and everything. But currently, I just managed to build a prototype. It's not really in production state. Then about hardware detection, we have a reliable PCI sound card detection and DALSA configuration. That means comparing to previous version of Debian, for example, Woody, where you had to manually enter the name of the kernel module appropriate for your sound card. Now everything has become much more simple. And there are a couple of packages called Hotplug and Discover, which have a database of hardware models and which will load the appropriate model module for your card. So you just install the CD and everything is properly configured. And also we have now a robust X window configuration, which is which was a weak point of Debian till a while ago. We are using Xorg. Recently we switched to Xorg. Basically because it provides a slightly wider support for new graphic cards. And the package collection, wait, I want to see if, then you back to the installer. This is a really simple interface, differently from other distributions like Red Hat or Mandrake. The installer is textual, and I think it's an advantage because it keeps the whole thing pretty simple, and you just need to answer and enter the fundamental information, nothing more. Okay, we will let it. Yeah, it's detecting hardware to proceed with the installation and so on. And back to the slides. The focus is on audio and sound application. That means in a plain Debian installer, you have really general purpose tasks. That means when it comes to select applications, you are presented a list of general tasks that, for example, a server or a WW server or a desktop machine or a laptop or office stuff like that. We had replaced that selection with specialized selection of tasks for audio. For example, you have tasks like DSP, MIDI, notation, recording, etc. And the window is something like this. That means there are a list of tasks. Each task includes more or less all the most important packages in that area. For example, for recording and mastering, or for editing sound, synthesis, and so on and so forth. I have to ask to the Debian. I have asked to the Debian maintainer also to enhance this view with the details about each task. That means which packages it does install. But currently, you just have this view of high level view. Then talking about the system, that means what you get when you install the whole thing. Right after installation, and there are some scripts which tune your system to make it less general. That means the Debian plain installer leaves you with a pretty rough system. These scripts just adjust everything, both from the system point of view. For example, it sets which services to boot, or it sets some parameters of the kernel and so on, to both for audio work and on another side for artwork. That means a theme and a window manager and everything. Then we have a low latency kernel. Currently we ship 2.6.12, release candidate 2, didn't have time to package the 3. Plus Ingo Molnar patches, which are patches to reduce the latency of the kernel. We are using the real-time option, not the desktop one. And recently, previous versions, as far as my tests are concerned, weren't really in a stable state. But starting from this release, I have the feeling, and the user reports confirm that, that we are getting quite close to stability. And using the real-time version of the patch, which is the most aggressive, that means you can achieve the best performance, it's okay. It doesn't create many problems on my system. Then we have Linux security modules that let you run some applications, for example, Jack, as normal user, because you get access to special scheduling policies in the kernel. Then we have real-time IRQ scripts, which basically configure the patches, because the patches let the kernel set a higher priority to the threads that are dealing with certain IRQs. That means your sound card can get a higher priority than your video card, typically. And this is very important when doing audio. Then we have ALSA drivers for talking with the sound card, and the Jack Audio Connection Kit to let application talk together. I think everybody knows about that, but it's a server, a low latency server, which let different application to exchange streams of data. So you can route the audio output of an application in the audio input of another one, and route it to the sound card too. And then we have LUTSPA plugins. This is the picture of the system, and it's more or less hierarchical apart from the first point. About user interface, we have we adapted the standard menu hierarchy just to make things easier. For example, this is localized for Italian language, but you can get this sound menu. Suono means sound, and you have this selection of tasks, and it's more or less organized in a way that people which are used to audio application will find familiar. You have editors and recorders and synthesis software. Everything is grouped in a more or less logical way. Of course, there is place for improvement. I'm using the light window manager that comes with the Moody, which is called Fluxbox. We ship also GNOME, but personally I suggest everybody to use Fluxbox because it's much more light, and in most of the cases, just for doing audio work, you don't need all the features that come with GNOME. On the other hand, recently the GNOME team has worked a lot on the performance of the whole thing, and it's getting better. But we still suggest Fluxbox as your favorite window manager. Okay. I said it, and then we have a little artwork. That means this is what you get when you install the system. It's you don't see so much because the lights are on, but it's really really simple. A wallpaper with some additional docs on the right, which are not displayed now because I killed them to let the full screen version of the slide run. Then back to the installer. Delicate part is for newcomers is hard disk partitioning. That means that you have to be careful on what you do, because you can erase data you need, and if you don't know how to operate exactly, you can do damages. But it should be more or less easy, because everything can be undone, and it's at the end of the partitioning process, the installer asks you, do you want really to do this and that? It provides you a list of things. Now I'm using not the disk, but a file on the file system which emulates the disks. For example, I can choose to. It takes a little bit. Like, I can choose this partition as the target partition. And it, it asks you about how to use it. Yeah, external 3-5 system. Yeah, okay. And about development, why we choose Bazin on Debian? There are some both technological and political and social reasons. One reason is that if you develop a distribution Bazin on a proprietary distribution, for example, Red Hat, SUSE, or Mandrake, you are depending on their choice. You are heavily depending on their choice. And their choice, in turn, are primarily influenced by the market. A very easy example is what happened to Red Hat, which chose to drop the support for the desktop version of Red Hat. And it didn't care about users. It was a choice, a market choice, not a choice on the users. So many users got in trouble for this choice. On the other hand, Debian is not a company, but it's an association of individuals, and it has also a so-called social contract. Which, among other things, state some very important principle. For example, that Debian will remain 100% free software. This, among other things, means that it won't disappear easily, because with free software, if the original author or maintainer gets out of the scene, it's relatively easy for other people to replace it and keep the effort on. And as Debian is a widely adopted distribution, there are many possibilities that people turn over the old maintainers in case they drop. And the social contract state, we will give back to the free software community. That means the link with the upstream author of application that are present in Debian is always very tight, and the bug reporting process take in account upstream authors, and bug reports are forwarded upstream. If patches also in this case, this means give back. They don't hide problems. The bug tracking system is publicly available, and you can both read and file bugs. And the priority is are the users. So the first goal is to build something which meets the needs of the users. There are also technological benefits like the packaging system, which is very powerful, and you can access it through the network as a whole. There are several hundreds of maintainers working for Debian, and this let the distribution have a really wide selection of packages. There is a strong community support. Now we have a good installer. Upgrades are really smooth. The bug tracking system, as I said, it's open, and it's the system is rather stable. It's also easier to customize it because it is a flexible system which can be really fine-tuned to all your needs, because most of the programming is done by shell scripts or modular components, and it's easy to add or remove or tune a singular component. But the trade-off, of course, is complexity as always. So there is now a project called Custom Debian Distribution, which aims to make the customization process of Debian easier and little bit more standard. Agno de Moody is playing a little role in the whole project because it's fostering new solution, is suggesting how to do, and working together with other custom distribution to provide a common infrastructure for that. And about Agno de Moody, one thing that I want to stress is that it's not a different distribution from Debian. It's just a comfortable way to install it. You get, at the end of the installation process, you get a really Debian compliant system. You don't have any extra thing. That means you don't have something which is not Debian, but which was built with separate libraries or which is not binary compatible. You just get a plain Debian system, but which is tuned for audio work. And yeah, applications are developed by third parties, which are called upstreams. And one of the goals is to contribute in hunting bugs, both inside Debian and relevant to the upstream application, and also to act as a bridge between the users and the authors of the application, especially with newbies, which find easy to contact the main list of Agno de Moody, but it's harder for them to get in touch with the original author. Some very short notes about the next steps. We are going to revamp our development infrastructure, especially the server. We will have a new website. Probably we will replace Plone, even though it will remain available for historic reasons. And we will have a wiki-oriented website, so it's easier for users to contribute. We will provide daily built ISO images to keep track of the development, and I would like to automatically build a CVS snapshot of upstream application, or at least some of them. We would like to improve the user support by relying a little bit more on Debian mailing lists, which are much more populated than the Agno ones and where you can get much more support. For example, the Debian user mailing list and the Debian multimedia mailing list, which are the most important ones for a Debian user. And the issue tracking system is currently based on GeForge, but we will switch to a program called Track. We hope that it will be easier to manage the whole thing. And then we would like to foster the creation of a team or a group of people dealing with the quality assurance of audio packages of Debian. This is a thing that we have still to imagine in details, but that will be pushed in the next month. This team would, for example, focus on a well-defined set of packages which are audio packages, provide bleeding-edge application, test them and look for possible bugs, discuss design and interface issues relating to the distribution, and maintain a frequently asked question list, so on and so forth. Okay, I think I run out of time, so if there are any questions, I'm here to answer.
Okay, thank you very much, Frey. Okay, we have questions from the internet audience.
Antonio Malara from Pisa, Italy asks, do you plan to support the PowerPC architecture?
Well, good question. We planned it, and we also have machines to develop. Currently, we lack manpower. I don't know. It was on our plans, but it turned out to be a little bit demanding in terms of manpower. I would like to do in the next months another try, because the first time I've tried to do the port, the Debian installer especially and the hardware support wasn't really good. But following the mailing list on Debian, I feel now the situation is a little bit better. I would like to try it, but we make no guarantees on it right now.
Okay, another question from here.
Andrea Glorioso from Media Innovation Unit. Does it work? Yeah, okay. My colleague of Free, I would like to add one thing to the PowerPC question that was made before. As Free has said, we currently have the machines. We have a G5, I think,
yeah, G5
machine.
And G4
and
laptop.
A G4 laptop. And we could probably, if there is some volunteer that wants to use those machines, to help in building the PowerPC port, we can probably arrange for lending those machines to that person. Of course, we would need some kind of guarantee that those machines won't disappear somewhere.
Okay, I'd like to add, maybe everybody knows already, on the conference DVD, there's also an image of the live Agnula CD. And now we have one last question from here, from the lecture hall.
Asbjørn Sæbe from Norway. And this is a general question, but I wonder, when I install Dmoody, there is a choice of file systems. Are there any file systems that are preferred with respect to...
Yes.
Performance.
Well, this is an issue which is quite often discussed on mailing lists. Currently, I do not feel to suggest any particular file system. I think the choices are two. One is external 3, X3, and the other one is Razer FS. I don't have any deep understanding of both, so I still don't know which one is the best for audio purposes. It depends also on what you have to do, which tasks you have to do, because it's different if you have to use it just as a MIDI sequencer or if you want to hard disk records large projects. This is a thing that I feel that is still not really sure, because it's still discussed on the mailing list, so I don't have any definite answer. But the answer is also, it depends on your needs. It would be good to have some documentation which maps the needs on the tools. That means if you do this, use external 3. If you do other things, use RazorFS or something like this. But currently, I'm not aware of any documentation, exhaustive documentation on this point.
Once upon a time, it was said that the external 2 was faster than the external 3, but that is probably not valid anymore.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, could be. I don't have any benchmark at hand, but the main benefit, in my view, of external 3 is that it has journaling. So, yeah, I find it comfortable, but.
Okay, so thank you very much again, Frey.
Okay.
And we will have now a 3 minutes break, and afterwards the talk of Fernando. And in the media theater afterward, after Fernando will be a demo by Paul Davis, and they will wait for us here. So the current talk is canceled, but still they will wait for us, so everybody can enjoy Fernando's talk. Thank you.